We're going to be talking about happiness today, and our guest is Elena Davidson. She is a happiness coach and the best-selling author of the book Finding Your Own Happy, The Soul Searcher's Guide to Peace and Happiness in Everyday Life. She specializes in helping empathic and sensitive women end emotional turmoil, reclaim their confidence, and experience real peace so that they can be free to create lives they truly love. After decades of personal exploration, self-reflection, spiritual practice, work with all sorts of healers and modalities, and even going into therapy herself, Elena wondered why she was still struggling with sometimes debilitating depression and had to work so hard to be happy. Not finding satisfactory answers from those she turned to for help, she embarked on her own personal quest that brought her revelations, insights, and understanding that helped her transform her inner turmoil and to assist others in doing the same. Her professional training spans decades of exploration and study in fields of consciousness, psychology, personal development, energy healing, and along with her natural empathic and intuitive abilities, informed her work with clients. She is also a certified transformational kinesiologist and holds a BA in child study and human social dynamics. She lives in the beautiful small little town of Moab, Utah. Elena, it's nice to have you on the show today.
Yes, I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Okay, so was there anything else in your history that you think is important for the people to know about before we start talking about the ideas in your book?
Well, there's certainly a lot of history there. I could go into many aspects. I guess one thing that wasn't mentioned in my bio is the importance of our childhood experiences and how they affect our happiness and the work of healing those being an important piece to getting to a happy place. And that was certainly true for me. I had experiences in my own childhood that it took me a long time to identify as being traumatic and therefore a longer time to figure out how to heal them. So that is also a piece of the journey.
What? Give me an example of one type of problem that you had in childhood that kept you from being happy later on in life. Can you do that?
Yeah, so there were many issues in my childhood that weren't recognized as such, mostly emotional neglect. And the biggest issue there was not the neglect itself, but the denial that the neglect existed. And so throughout my younger years, childhood, teenage years, I kept feeling like there's something not right here. My family is not like other families. And I would bring it up to my parents and they would say, what are you talking about? You have this, that, the other. Your life is, there was no acknowledgement that there was something amiss. And it wasn't until I got into adulthood and started to share some of my experiences with other people that they said, you know, that isn't normal. And so it took me a long time to sort out what is sort of normal parenting behavior, so forth, and what's not, and then to recognize just how deeply that had impacted me, if that makes sense.
Well, so for the listeners, they may not know what you're talking about. Were you talking about emotional abuse or lack of emotionality from your parents?
Like, yeah, so this is this is a thing that I see a lot with clients, is that there's a degree to which childhood trauma is recognized as such, right? Very obvious forms of trauma, like verbal abuse or physical abuse. And then there are a lot more subtle levels of trauma from childhood, things that can be traumatic for children, that are harder to pinpoint and harder to recognize. And when you go through something like that, you really spend a lot of time wondering, like, is there something wrong with me? Like, is this normal? Because it's harder to say, yes, this is definitely abuse. And so in my case, it was mostly emotional neglect, lack of warmth, lack of connection for me, lack of emotional availability, lack of really any emotional support or guidance throughout my life.
Well, I've had people that I've been counseling in years past that said, my father probably loved me. He went to work every day and made a paycheck and came home and made sure that I had food and clothes and everything like that. But he never, ever told me he loved me. Is this what you're
talking about? Yeah, that would be a piece of it, or just not caring about my well-being, not caring about my emotional life, my feelings, my not taking interest in who I am as a person or what I'm involved with. But again, for me, the thing that was the most damaging and the most challenging was not that piece, but that there was no acknowledgement that it was happening or that it was anything outside of totally perfectly wonderful and normal. That's the piece that got me so twisted up for so long and had me feeling like there must just be something wrong with me, that I'm not super grateful and happy in my childhood, because there was no acknowledgement that my needs weren't actually getting met. The belief was that I was the one that had the problem and they were doing everything perfectly wonderful and fine. And that's where the confusion came forth, right? I didn't have the ability to see what was really happening and have the clarity. And so then I internalized all of my pain, because in their view, there was no reason to have pain. There was no reason to have any of the feelings that I was having, because everything was fine.
So if someone is listening to you now and they think, well, that kind of sounds like me, is there anything that the person can do? I mean, there's quite a differential between the authority of the parents and the child. A child is not likely to say, you're emotionally distanced from me and it's making me feel bad.
So here's one of the things that I discovered about the childhood trauma experience, is that when something hurts in your childhood, but your family or the people that you need and depend on for your well-being to survive don't acknowledge it, that feeling has to go underground, because in order to survive, you have to maintain your sense of connection and your sense of relationship with your primary caregivers. So what do? You make it a problem with yourself, not with the situation or not with the people, because you have to maintain that relationship. And so when I talk to people about healing from the things that have happened to them, the first thing I talk about is honesty and truth-telling with yourself about what really happened and the impact that it had on you. So to be able to have an emotionally appropriate response to the pain that you suffered, and you cannot do that unless there is someone in your life that can empathize with you and validate what you went through. And so if you haven't had that in your childhood, then when you get to adulthood, it's really important to be able to have that emotionally appropriate response and get support and empathy for what you experienced, if that makes sense.
So do you advise that a person that came through this type of experience in childhood like you did, the first thing that they should do is go get a therapist?
Well, that certainly can be one piece of it. I would say really question your own, seek validation outside of your family unit. Get some input and get some information, and that can come from a therapist. It can also come from other people in your life to understand more clearly what actually occurred and what is in the realm of normal, so to speak. So the term that is often used for this is called gaslighting, and it's when the best definition I've heard of gaslighting is when people will do something that's maybe not the nicest thing, but then what happens is they blame your reaction and your response to it rather than the actual behavior. And so then you start to think that you and your response is the problem rather than the actual situation at hand.
Can you give us an example from your practice of someone who was gaslighted?
Sure. So, I mean, it happens a lot, especially in the intimate relationship. And so when someone maybe calls out another person on maybe doing something that wasn't so kind. So an example, someone behaved in a way that was hurtful to the other person, right? And instead of taking responsibility and saying, oh, I'm really sorry that that hurt you, like, what can we do to make it better? Can we make it up? It was sort of like, oh, well, you're just too sensitive, or you're overreacting. What are you talking about? Like, what I did wasn't that big a deal. And then justifying why they did it and blaming you for being upset about it, even though what they did was initially hurtful. But now the problem is about your upset, not about what actually happened between the two people.
I see. And so how do you get past that point if there's no good communication with that other person?
Well, that's the place where you need to seek outside help and outside understanding for your experience. And also, I think for a lot of people, they don't understand that this is a dynamic that's going on. So then they go, like, they start to question themselves and, like, oh, maybe I was just overreacting. Maybe I am too sensitive. Maybe I need to fix something about myself, rather than being like, you know what, actually, that was a reasonable and appropriate emotional response to what happened. And yes, a good therapist can help you sort that out. Or, you know, you maybe seek evidence from other people in your life to give you some perspective and root yourself in your own sense of truth around it. Some people are perpetual gaslighters, and they're going to do everything in your power to make you think that you're the one that's crazy, that you're the one that's wrong. And so at that point, you really have to just find some external input to be grounded in your own sense of truth. And if they don't stop, if they continue to do that, then you have to make your choices to adjust in that relationship and not participate, basically.
So what demographic of readers are you going after? Who do you want to read this book that you think will get the most benefit out of it?
Yep. So there's a few. When I wrote it, my intention was writing it for the person who feels like, what's wrong with me? I don't get it. I have tried so many different things. I've struggled with feeling happy my whole life, and I'm starting to wonder if there's something just uniquely wrong with me that isn't wrong with anybody else, because I don't get it and I don't get what I'm missing. And many of those people are highly sensitive or empathic, and they don't understand what that means for them and how it affects their emotional and mental health. And they just go around thinking that there's something wrong with them because they don't understand it. And so the book was really written for those that fit into that category that are potentially highly sensitive or empathic and feel a lot of what's going on around them, but then internalize it as if it's something wrong with them that they're trying to fix. And the difference, so we all have our own emotional content, right? Our own traumas from childhood, our own wounding, so to speak. And there's a way to work with that that can be healing and is important. And as a sensitive or an empathic person, you may also feel things that don't have anything to do with you, that are just the energy of the people around you. And if you go to try to heal or work with and resolve that piece of your experience the same way you would as if it's actually your trauma, your issue, your feeling, it's not going to work the same way because it's just something that you're sensing from someone else and then internalizing for yourself. And so to be able to separate those two out, for me, was part of what took me out of decades of struggle with depression, because what I realized is I'm perceiving and feeling so much of what's happening around me, and it's not my issue. And then I had to learn how to separate myself from other people and really find what was true for me.
So you give that advice in your book. So if someone is feeling that way, they'll be able to drill down on that.
Yes, to be able to start to separate out what is actually my own pain, hurt, trauma, feeling, and what is me just absorbing the feelings of the people around me, and telling the difference is a crucial piece, because then you can know what to do with it, right? What are you going to do with your childhood trauma is different than what you're going to do with your mom's feelings that you're just picking up on.
What do you think is the number one thing that keeps you from being happy?
Well, I mean, as a sensitive and empathic person, I think it is not recognizing the difference between those two and absorbing everybody else's feelings and emotions as if they are your own. I think that's a big piece of it. And then the other piece, I think, in general, is it's often, or, well, sort of twofold. They go together, which is the unresolved hurts, pains, and wounds of your past, and also the subconscious patterns or beliefs that have been put into place in response to those traumas.
Now, you said the difference between sensitive and an empathic. Can you kind of elucidate more?
Yeah, sure. So the way that I think about that is a highly sensitive person is sort of like your volume is a little bit turned up around things, so you feel things more intensely, maybe sounds, light, emotions, they're a little bit more intense for you, right? They come on a little bit more strongly than maybe for the average person, and so it just, you feel it a lot more deeply. An empathic person, there's many layers of empathic person. I'm an emotional empath, and that's who my book mostly speaks to, is that you are feeling and processing what's going on with other people, not just with yourself. So you have a very heightened sense to other people's emotions, other people's emotional experiences. You can feel it as if it's your own. You know, you listen to the news and you just start crying. So you're very attuned to the emotionality of other people. And, you know, you can get around a certain person and start to feel what they're feeling, for example.
So would you say that, as a general rule, that women have these two characteristics to a much greater extent than men?
I would say that I do encounter many, many more women than men that are empathic and sensitive, but I think there are plenty of men that also experience it. So I wouldn't discount that it's also an experience for for many men, maybe in the overall population of men versus the overall population of women. Yes, there are many more women, but it's also a thing for men.
So what sets your work apart from other approaches that are out there, like traditional psychotherapy and traditional...
I would say number one is understanding what it means to be empathic and separating out that from addressing the stuff that actually belongs to you. So that's the number one thing. And then the other piece is that we're working a lot on what I would call the energetic level, and some other work does do this as well, but really understanding what you're perceiving, what's happening in your body, what sort of senses you're picking up on. And then as well, when we get into the stuff that is actually yours and that's needing healing, my kinesiology work helps us go right into the particularly relevant trauma or issue or pattern that needs to be resolved in order to shift experience. I literally, within 5 minutes of getting on a call with someone, can get right to this situation from childhood, let's say. And like in 5 minutes, we're already into, okay, this thing happened to you when you were 5 years old and you're still carrying around the pain from it. And let's look at what the pain is there that didn't get to be healed, what you didn't get to be acknowledged for, and let's shift it. So it is very, there's not a lot of storytelling, not a lot of content that's needed. It's very quick in getting right into whatever that little piece is that needs to be shifted. And that's something that my clients remark on over and over again, is how quickly we can pinpoint what the core issue is that's going to change the experience. And I would say, most of the time, you leave a session feeling better, feeling uplifted, having sort of a lightness to yourself, which you can get that in other therapies, so forth. But often when I leave therapy, I don't necessarily feel that sense of like shift and lightness. There's like the emotional hangover sometimes.
So didn't you say that in your practice, you deal with kinesiology, and
yes,
and if that's true, tell our audience what that is and what it means in a practical sense.
Sure. Yeah, it's something that I use with my clients, and I also teach my clients how to use it with themselves. So kinesiology is, and there's many, many forms of kinesiology, and I'm just using the most basic muscle testing. And muscle testing is a way that you can test muscles of the body for strong and weak responses to different stimuli. So in my case, it's often asking questions about different things. So including, like, is this mine? So you get a feeling showing up and you can muscle test to find out, is this actually my feeling or is it somebody else's? And that can help you with the sorting out process of what you're actually experiencing. And it's a way also to tap into what's happening at the subconscious level. So if your body believes something at the subconscious level, your muscle is going to test strong. If it doesn't believe it, it's going to test weak. So you get this feedback from your own body about what's going on beyond just your conscious mind.
Back years ago when I was on the circuit as far as on stage performances, I'd get maybe five people up from the audience and have them line up. Well, first I'd take one person and I would ask them to hold their arm out horizontal and to resist me trying to move it while they thought about something horrible, terrible in their childhood, something like that. And when they were thinking that, they could not hold their arm up. Yes. Now, mm-hmm. is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah. So I do a similar thing. I ask if I'm doing a live demo. I say, think of something that's a little bit stressful for you, and then I will push on their arm, and their arm will go weak. And then think of something that makes you feel joyful, happy, excited, and then they'll be strong. So that's a base test. I can also say, make a true statement, right? So it could be, my name is Alana, and that will muscle test strong because I register as that being my actual name. And then I'll say, my name is John, and my arm will go weak because I know that's not true. And so you can register sort of these true and false beliefs as well. So yes, that is the basic mechanism.
I was also doing more than just one person. I was trying to demonstrate how auras work, and I would line up people shoulder to shoulder and see how many people out would still test weak when the first person was thinking the bad thoughts.
Oh, that, yeah, right? So there is that collective piece of it, right? We are very influenced by the energy of the people around us, especially being empathic, right? Then you're even more so influenced. And so part of my work is training my clients how to maintain their own energy and not be so easily affected by the energy of everybody else around them.
Right. Let's talk about depression. There are so many different ways of thinking about it, what causes it, what you do to solve the problem and everything, and
mm-hmm.
work, some of the stuff doesn't work. I remember back when I was doing family practice, maybe 10% of my walk-in population would come in with a complaint of depression. And back in those days, they would want something like Prozac or some medication that they saw on television to get over their depression. And I would tell them, routinely speaking, assuming that they didn't have anything unusual going on with their physical body or with their lab,
mm-hmm.
whatever like that, I would say, you're not depressed because you're low on Prozac. So I'm not going to give you any Prozac, but my prescription for you is every day until you come back, I want you to do one thing for one person that's in a worse shape than you are to help them in some way. And don't expect them to pay you for it, either by complimenting you or by paying you money or whatever like that. Just do it and see what happens. And mm-hmm. you know what happened as a result of that experiment? Most of the people that came back in a month didn't need any medication, they thought. They were a lot happier.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to think, is depression your body's response to not being in the mode of helping other people on a regular basis? Now, what do you think?
Well, I think there is value in helping other people. And one of the things that I have seen, especially with my population, with the empathic folks, is we tend to be people pleasers and over helpers of other people to the point that it is exhausting us and draining us and taking all of our life energy. And so one of the things that I had to learn how to do was to have better boundaries and not give so much of myself over to other people and take care of me. So I think it goes a little bit both ways. I think there is this real lovely joy and value in contributing to other people. And if you're a habitual people pleaser and giver and overextender, then learning how to take care of yourself and to value yourself is an important piece of the equation as well. And that there's a balance in that for sure.
Well, as I remember back, and it's been many years, most mm-hmm. of these people were not empathic of concern of other people. They just did what they did and ignored other people's needs and everything. And when they were
there is definitely a place where I think, and there's so many levels of depression and so many ways that people experience depression and so many different sort of contributors. And I think there is certainly a population of people that become rather self-absorbed with their own problems and their own pain. And so something like that of inviting them to see the pain of others and to have the experience of helping someone can be a really valuable way to take one out of one's own suffering. And also, even with my population, the opportunity to get outside of yourself and engage in the world in a positive way can make a big difference depending on what you're going through.
Right.
And, you know, just having that positive feedback loop can make a big difference.
Who is your best client for getting your book and reading it?
Well, I've had a few. Like, I had one woman. We worked together for a year, actually, and she basically, we had met in person as well, but she got my book and basically called me up. It's like, I have to work with you. And because she knew that I was speaking, like, to her, and she understood that I had something that she had been missing for a really long time. And it did really dynamically change her life to understand how to work with being empathic and understand that she wasn't just, you know, broken. Or I have another client actually right now who, I mean, she has a litany of childhood trauma issues, right, that she's been in therapy for a really long time. And we've touched on a little bit of that and done a little bit of healing work on that, but mostly what she's coming to understand is just how empathic she is and how sensitive she is and how aware she is of things around her. And it's been really beautiful to watch her going from thinking that it's all her trauma issues and she just has trauma to being able to discern what else is going on and step into a place of more power around it and understanding, oh, this isn't me just having a trauma response. This is me being sensitive to what somebody did or said, or to understanding, you know, how somebody else's energy is affecting me. And now I can take my power back because I see it and I understand it for what it is.
There's a Native American slogan, or I guess slogan's the right word, that deals with empathy, and it's don't criticize your neighbor until you've walked a mile in his moccasins.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'm familiar with that.
And that's really what you're getting at with empathy, is it not?
Well, that is a piece of it. So there's a difference between being empathic and empathy, right? Anybody has access to empathy and to seeing things from someone else's point of view, to understanding what it's like to be them, to experience them. Being empathic takes it to another degree, which is, and in some cases, a level of being psychically aware of what is happening for other people. Like, so I'll give you an example. I live in Utah. My mom lives in Massachusetts. And there were some times when I would wake up and feel really weird or sad or not understand, like, what am I feeling today? I don't understand this. And then I would get the sense that it had to do with her, literally call her up and ask her how she was feeling. And she would tell me, I remember one time I called and said, Mom, how are you doing? She was like, not so good. I was like, yeah, that's why I'm calling. Because I knew and I felt it. And so I actually felt it myself, what was going on for her. another time I was text messaging a friend and felt overwhelming senses of sadness and grief. And I go, hey, what's with the sadness and grief? And she said, oh, what are you talking about? I'm fine. And I said, well, how about somebody that you're connected with? And she told me that her roommate had lost a child and was like really in that feeling very deeply. And once she told me that, all of my sadness and all of my grief just went away. And I was like, oh, okay, that's what was going on. That was what I was feeling, was this person's sadness and grief. Before I knew as an empath, I would have been like, what's wrong with me? Why am I feeling so sad today? And it has all this grief and I just want to curl up in my bed and cry. What? So that's the degree sometimes to being empathic, is like you literally feel what is happening with other people.
Right. Why don't you take a minute here to tell the audience how to get a copy of your book, and if you want to tell them anything about a website or anything, take some time now.
Yeah, sure. So the title of my book is Finding Your Own Happy, and you can actually get a free copy at findingyourownhappybook.com. That will also invite you to my private Facebook group, where I do a lot of talking, connecting, sharing. I do free trainings. It's just a lovely community to go deeper in all of the content in the book and all of the sort of, even a whole bunch of stuff that I've been working with since writing the book. And that group, again, is Finding Your Own Happy also, and that's on Facebook. And so those are the best, sort of two best ways to get connected with me.
Do you have a website that you want them to look at?
I do. Yep, you can go to my website as well. It's healingmindsandhearts.com. And you can also go there to get the book and find out a whole bunch of other information.
Right. Well, let me just say that it's been a pleasure having you, the listener, listening to the show today. And it's my sincerest desire to have you get something from it that'll make your life richer, fuller, and in this time of coronavirus pandemic, safer. And I, again, am Reverend Wynn Henderson. I am an ordained Christian minister and a retired medical doctor. I have a dual perspective to bring you content to solve problems in your life. Freedom from addiction, share your mission, and truth just below the surface is the longest-running, single-hosted, and produced, spiritually-based radio internet talk show in America. It has been continuously running for the last 20-plus years, and I introduce you to celebrities and non-celebrities alike who have something to say about the disease of addiction in its 30-plus different forms, about the importance of finding your mission or purpose in life, and then acting on it, and also talking about investigative things that I find out that you need to know about. So my mission or purpose in life is to spread the message that there is a cure for all addictive behaviors. This is a spiritual cure, and the treatment program is profiled in my book, Freedom from Addiction 3. It's available on Amazon and wherever books are sold. If you meet three simple criteria, everyone gets well. And you can find out what those criteria are. I have two free resources where you can start your journey. The first is to follow a link to my podcast. And it's www.freedomfromaddiction.libsyn.com. If you want to spell Libsyn, L-I-B as in boy, S-Y-N, no spaces, no caps. And if you want to learn something about addictive problems, go to my website, www.revwynhendersonmd.com. And now we're at the end of our time, and I just wanted to say, Helena, thank you so much for the time you spent with us, telling us about happiness, today, and I think that you're doing a great job, and you should continue, and hopefully you'll get that positive feedback in greater and greater amounts as time goes on.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Okay, bye-bye.